Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call, held on Thursday, the 7th of June, 2018, at 1600 UTC. On the call today, we have Greg Reffer, Kathy Kleiman, Christine Durain, Michael Graham, Philip Corwin, Rebecca Tushnet, Susan Payne. On the audio only, we have Stacy Chan. We do not have any apologies for today. From staff, we have Ariel Lane, Julie Hedlund, Barry Cobb, Mary Wong, and myself, Andrea Glandon. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thanks so much, Andrea. And thanks, everyone, for joining today. Thanks also to Greg and Stacy from Analysis Group who have joined us as well. So the agenda is to follow from where we left off yesterday in the registry survey. As you'll note here on the where the agenda and the meeting details are, if you scroll down, you'll see that we have the links to each of the Google Docs. And thank you, Aria, for putting the Google Doc of the registry operators survey also into the chat. We recommend that you follow along by going into the Google Doc. And we certainly even encourage you as we go along, if you think of any edits or anything that you want to add as we're going along, please do so as well. And I hope that people will find this to be a useful way to go through the documents. So I just wanted to mention, staff just wanted to mention a couple of things in our discussions with Analysis Group, these were some issues that came up yesterday as well, but just to give you some things to think about as we continue to go through the surveys. Some of the discussion yesterday centered on questions that were eliminated, and Analysis Group is well aware of how important it is to get questions answered. And yet, balance that with the length of the survey and the realization that some questions just may not be answered. Some survey takers just may not wish to answer certain questions. As staff, we know that, the goal of this policy development process is that the policy recommendations are data-based. So we are trying to gather as much data as possible. There's also the concern about survey fatigue, and that if a survey is long or if some of the questions are off-putting, we may get a very few responses. And we've seen that has happened in the past as well. So I just wanted to give Greg and Stacy a chance if they wanted to just raise a couple of points along those lines, just that we have them, that we're thinking about them, and also to ask you to think about if there is a question that we think might not get any responses, can you think of other ways that we might try to get those data? So, Greg, Stacy, if you have anything you'd like to add, please go ahead.
Thank you, Julie. This is Greg, for the record. I think that was really well stated, Julie. I think an example of that kind of issue was something that I think Stacy raised on the call that we had with you all yesterday regarding asking what their specific Sunrise pricing was. I think clearly be nice data to get from registry operators. I would be very surprised if many of them, maybe any of them, actually provide that kind of information, given the lengths that we've gone to in the past to attempt to get that kind of data. And I think that's also a good example of a question that, because we're asking for very sensitive information, it's likely to result in at least some people decide, or registry operators or survey respondents deciding to just stop taking the survey. So I think we need to be pretty careful and cognizant of those types of issues as we're reviewing the questions that we ultimately decide to pose to respondents.
Thank you, Greg. And really, this is just all for you all to think about. We're not, you know, saying that you can't, you know, we should not suggest that, you know, we can't include questions, and if we want to reinstate questions that were not included, you know, certainly that is entirely up to the subteam to decide. Just to ask you to keep in mind the balance between, you know, including questions that then may, let me say, hinder the goal of getting a broad response or a more complete response or numbers of responses. So I'll just stop there, and let's just go ahead. I'll ask if anybody has anything they want to say before we get started and go back in the document. I think we were on question 16, and there were, you know, there was a discussion about questions that have been eliminated and how we could address them. And Susan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan. Yeah, I just wanted to say right at the outset, I'm sorry I had to drop off before the very end of the call yesterday, but I'd always said that I wasn't actually available for yesterday's call, so I couldn't make it right through to the end. But I could see from the notes that got circulated that there was a discussion about the amount of work we needed to do and consequently a decision made to arrange multiple two-hour calls on no notice whatsoever. And so I just want to take the opportunity to express my extreme objection to the way this is being handled. And I think there is a vast degree of work that needs to be done before these surveys can be issued. And rushing it through in this way without allowing people the opportunity to review the documents is unsatisfactory and is setting this up to fail. But with that said, I'm here on the call.
Thank you very much, Susan. And apologies for the haste and also for the extremely short notice in setting up additional calls. It was something that the subteam discussed yesterday, not something that the staff said we, you know, suggested, but it was a way that was suggested that we could try to move forward expeditiously to meet our timeline. But we do note your extreme, you know, concerns, and thank you for that. And we'll try to staff will try to support this process as best we can, and make sure that you know, it is done in as a complete and thorough quality way possible. I'm sorry, that's not said very well. Thank you so much for joining and for joining yesterday, Susan, and thanks, everyone. And I see we have a few more people who joined, so that's great. We'll note that in the attendance as well. And then I will then move to the Google document. And I think that we were still on question 16, and that I think there was some discussion around, you know, trying to do some edits here. And Kathy, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Terrific. So I have a kind of an overarching question based on kind of where we left the conversation last time, Kathy, to Greg and Stacey. Is Stacey on too?
Yeah, she is.
Oh, okay. Hi, Stacey. So where we kind of got stuck yesterday was where an anecdotal question became a more concrete question. And one of the reasons we went anecdotal in some cases was to not plant answers, not plant ideas or directions, that there may be kind of broad, there may be broad issues that we're getting, but from our perspective, we could see that there were different ways people might answer the question, and we kind of wanted to invite all of them. So let me ask you whether anecdotal questions, especially if the working group has already kind of said we're willing to take anecdotal answers, and it may be too broad to answer, but when can we go back, from your perspective, can we go back to anecdotal questions so that we don't wind up having to go through every variation of a question, especially when we can see potential policy implications and wide answers, and you've only hit kind of a fraction of them. So we could go on forever with these choices, but it would take us forever to design it. Can we just revert back to the anecdotal and at our kind of own risk and work with the answers when they come in to avoid kind of planting pre-assigned answers? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. This is Greg. I'll at least begin, but Stacey, you should, of course, feel free to jump in. I mean, I think you certainly could go back to anecdotal questions where you provide open-ended responses. I think if you did that, I would lean towards being very selective in how many of those questions you actually include in the survey, just because it does take time for people to respond to those answers, and it does lead to respondent dropout, and so I wouldn't want to include too many of those types of questions in the survey. With respect to kind of potentially leading people to answer a question in a certain direction based on the options are provided, that's certainly a concern that I think we have as well. More generally speaking, it's a potential design issue with surveys. I think, you know, in an ideal world, what we would do is we would provide options that would encompass, let's say, something like 75% of how respondents would typically, what they would typically select for a given question, and then, of course, provide kind of the other option where they could enter responses that we hadn't envisioned. So I think that's the ideal, but I do realize that obviously takes a little bit more time. So I think those are at least some of the trade-offs to consider. Stacey, I don't know if you have anything else.
Thank you, Greg. Christine.
Thank you. This is Christine Doreen. I would like to ask a question to Kathy to follow up. I am wondering, what is your, let me rephrase. Are you more interested in retaining the open-ended anecdotal type question because you feel it's more valuable? I know Greg has said that they're very concerned about drop-off. But I also heard you talk about sort of in the interest of time and getting things moving along, and it'll take a long time to kind of rewrite these as non-narrative answer questions. And so are you being more driven by the desire for open-ended answers, or are you more being driven by the desire to try to meet the timeline? Because I'm going to suggest that while we should be respectful of the timeline and we should always be keeping that in mind, that should not drive any of our decisions today. If we decide as a group, and we may or may not, if we decide as a group that this Q16 and Q17 needs to be a table and we need to sit down and figure out what needs to go into that table, then I think we need to do that even if it means yet another call. And I don't think it means another call tomorrow or another call Monday or another call Tuesday. I mean, I am fully in favor of, you know, pushing that timeline if we need to do it because we are going to get the best possible answer. So I'm trying to be mindful of Greg's concern that if we ask for a lot of people to type out answers, they're just going to drop. I agree. If I see a survey with a lot of fill-in-the-blanks, I just quit. If I can't just tick a couple boxes, I'm done. So I feel like I'm just like to explore that a little bit more and see what's driving you there. Kathy, you think?
Great. It's a great question. Thank you for asking. And part of what's driving me is I think you phrased some questions really, really well. And I'm not sure people are going to flee from certain open-ended questions like their experiences with the sunrise period. I think people want to talk to us about some of these are, you know, new things. We created them out of poll cloth. I think in some ways people want to talk about it. And so I think that opportunity, we created it on purpose, that opportunity for people to talk broadly. And again, I think you phrased it really well in some of the originals. My father was an economist engineer, so he always wanted quantifiable data. I'm a lawyer. We deal with more broader types of answers. And so I think we can handle the more anecdotal, provided we don't ask a lot of it. But once we descend into the quantifiable, I think we're going to be here for a long time. So with my co-chair hat on, I am aware of the timing. I'm just not sure if we could spend an infinite amount of time. I'm not sure we're going to get to all the possibilities, just because I'm not sure we know everyone's experiences. So I think select open-ended questions will serve us well on many grounds. Thanks. And thanks for the question.
Thank you, Kathy. Christine, I see. Oh, you say thanks, Kathy. And I see Susan saying, I would say that registries who want to talk to us have had and continue to have plenty of opportunity to do so. So shall we at least explore, and I'm looking to you, Christine, really, thinking about how we might rewrite or reformulate questions 16 and 17 if we do want to use a tabular structure, and noting that, you know, the desire is to, you know, to try to come up with the best possible way, you know, to get answers, irrespective of the length of time it may take. Thank you. Christine, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, since I was called on. I'm actually struggling to go back because I don't have the red line open, so I'm struggling to remember which questions were removed from which of the anecdotal questions these were meant to take place of. So for a fact, I can tell already that the table does not pull in. I mean, the table goes above and beyond. The table comes up with suggestions, ideas of, I think Greg pointed it out, like we're guessing at what 75% of people would say, and we are providing those opportunities, assuming that 75% of people will answer those questions, and then you're providing an other for the 25% that are unlikely to think that those selections are provided. I think I heard Greg say that. So I'm looking ahead to find out on the table which questions these deleted, and I'm trying to manage multiple documents here, so I apologize.
Thank you, Christine. This is Julie. So staff have put the table into a Debbie Connect room as well. But Greg, Stacey, could you also give us some guidance of where, how we arrived?
And Kathy, just while you're doing that, Kathy, the original question, this is Christine again, was, you know, what do we think about those questions 16 and 17, the ones where the analysis group converted the a narrative questions into the sort of tick box or table type questions. I know when we ended the call, one option on the table, I think I may have proposed it, or maybe it was Michael, or maybe it was a combination, to sort of combine them and to say, you know, for this, for 30 days, for 60 days, for 90 days, you know, how would, you know, Sunrise, how would brand owners, you know, be best able to protect their marks? How big of an operational significance would it be on a registry operator? I'm now trying to toggle back to that other doc. What was the other bit? But I believe that there were multiple sort of questions that allowed you know, we were sort of guessing at the, you know, some of the issues that might come up with Sunrise, if that answers Kathy's question.
And thank you, Christine. Before I go to Kathy, staff have pulled up that spot in the original table, and there's actually a comment associated with it that says, you know, general comments on these questions. Some of these questions will need threshold questions to be answered first. Need to give direction to the survey provider. And here are some of the questions that talks about, you know, preventing cyber squatting, and then there were some other things as well. So I think I've got the right spot there. Kathy, please go ahead.
That was what I was looking for. Thank you both, Christine and Julie. It may 16 and 17, but kind of really, really back to on the original document that we created as a subteam. And thank you for posting that, Julie.
Kathy, apologies for interrupting you, but you are extremely muffled. I have no idea what you said. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to switch phones to a landline. I'm on my cell. And I'll try to talk really loud just for a second. I just said thank you. What I was looking for was actually the original questions that came from our subteam document before they were put into a table. And that's posted in front of us. So thanks, and I'm going to switch phones, so I'll go on mute for a second.
Thanks, Kathy. So here we have them. These are the original questions, and now we also then have 16 and 17. Greg, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Stacey. I just wanted to respond with the original questions, and it does look like, Julie, you have those pulled up on the screen. So as you're saying, I think the questions 16 and 17 in the current draft survey instrument were intended to convert the questions, do you think the 30-day minimum sunrise period is effective in preventing cyber squatting? There's a follow-up to that why or why not, which is not covered by these questions. And then if you run any sunrise period for longer than 30 days, what were the benefits to the registry or to brand owners? What were the drawbacks? Were there any complaints or was anyone confused? Include complaints from potential non-brand owner registrants.
And I think the kind of the one set of potential responses that our current questions 16 and 17 don't cover are the potential kind of benefits or costs to brand owners and, I guess, registrars as well. So I think these questions were really designed to just look at it from the registry's perspective.
Christine, please go ahead. And thank you, Greg and Stacey.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. And that was a very helpful. I was going to ask that question. I haven't had a chance to go through the other tables yet. I just back-to-back meetings all day yesterday. So I'm assuming that this table, because I know we ask similar questions later, so I'm assuming that you have a very similar table, but customized to the specific target. So registrars, so for instance, registrars have to implement Sunrise. I'm assuming there's completely different questions for registrars. I'm assuming that you do the same thing for how this impacts registrants or potential registrants. And this specific set of questions only goes to the relationship between the sunrise period that a registry operator offers and how complicated and burdensome that is versus the benefit that a trademark owner may or may not obtain. And really, this is from the registry operator standpoint. So we can't even ask brand owners here what they're getting. We're only asking registry operators if they think brand owners are getting a benefit. That's correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Look.
And Lori, please go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm on my phone. I hope you can hear. I want to go back to Christine's point about, and I know the many hours of discussions we've had, but now we're down to brass tacks and what's going to work when we're asking questions versus sort of what we were aspirationally trying to get at as a discussion group. So to this point about whether or not the registrars think brand owners are getting a benefit, is that relevant to what we find out if it's not the brand owners themselves? Like, I'm not sure why registrars would necessarily speak to brand owner benefits or costs.
So this is Greg just jumping in quickly. I think that's a really good point. So, and that's why we didn't include questions in the registry survey about kind of what they thought brand owners thought about the sunrise period or registrants thought about the sunrise period, because I think it would be a really difficult question to ask. And I don't, registry operators might have somewhat of an idea, but I think it'd be a little speculative.
Yeah, I this is Lori. I'm going to just jump in with a follow-up, Kathy, if you don't mind. And I would say I agree with that. I mean, speaking for an association that represents brand owners, I'm not so sure that registrars can answer those questions with any degree of certainty.
Thank you. And Kathy, please.
I'm on a different phone now. Is this clear?
Much better.
Okay, terrific. First, I just want to check. We're on registries, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And I guess we'd have to go back to the table. We're looking at 16 and 17. But looking at the original comments, the original questions we were asking, so a question to Greg and Stacey. A part here is you can see it. It's the kind of third and fourth bullet points down, sub-bullet points. What were the benefits to the registry, or I guess as the registry would see to the brand owners, but also what were the drawbacks? Were there any complaints? Was anyone confused? Include complaints from potential non-brand owner registrants. Where is that in the table, and I could be wrong. I don't think it's there. How do we include kind of the flip sides of both, which is what we worked very hard on our questions to make sure that both sides were represented?
Hi, this is Stacey. I hope it's okay that I just jump in here. So certainly we do want to stress that we attempted to include some options here in the grid, and we are looking for the expertise of the working group to help us know what other options would be good to include here to get the kind of feedback that you want. So please don't think that we're trying to limit the options that you offer here, because that was not our intent. Also, I think going back to Lori's comment, it is important for us to think about what kinds of responses we do think that registries are best placed to give versus, say, if we're asking about what complaints they received, perhaps asking brand owners what complaints they have about this process, because that would be more of a first-person experience for them rather than the registry.
I think our suggestion/request, maybe that's a little too strong, would be for the working group, the data sub-team, rather, to, if you had suggestions for other options to include, to make sure that we're kind of covering the kind of as full of a range as possible as the potential options or the kind of selections that registries might make, would be to add those to this Google document, and then we can incorporate them in the final survey.
Could you say that again more slowly, Greg?
Yeah, of course. I am known to talk quickly, so I can definitely say that more slowly. I think in our ideal world, if you know a couple members or even just one member of the data subteam were willing to add additional options to questions 16 and 17 in the Google document, I think that would be very helpful. I think, as Stacey noted, this was our first attempt at some potential options, but it's by no means meant to be kind of the definitive and final list.
Great.
Thanks, Greg and Stacey. I have Christine and then Susan, please.
Thank you. This is Christine, and I don't want to put words in Kathy's mouth because she's fully capable of articulating her own thoughts, but I wanted to pick up on her point. I think that if it were as simple as just coming up with more options, that would be an easy answer. I think what we're maybe trying to communicate is that the reason these were anecdotal is because we hadn't come up with the checklist. We actually went through the first time and tried to put we had sort of more definitive lists before, but we realized that what we really wanted to know was what are we missing? I am a registry operator. I can tell you what the costs are and the technical burdens are. I mean, donuts has participated. We've had GTLD registries participate. What we're trying to figure out here is if for a Sun, people who chose to extend their sunrise past the minimum 30 days. Why did you do it? Did you have a perceived benefit to yourself? Were you trying to help trademark owners? This grid, there's no good way to get to that answer on a grid. And then when we talk about the drawbacks, we are specifically asking for not only complaints from brand owners about sunrises, but other people. What if somebody else came in and was super confused about sunrises generally? Maybe the place they'd go is the registry to complain about that. And we're specifically trying to solicit stories or information about how the sunrise impacted in ways that we haven't even imagined yet, so that when we design the next applicant guidebook, we can make sure that we address some of those issues. And we don't so much care about the one-off outliers, but if there's a pattern of a lot of people were confused about X, then we need to go back and try to fix that. So I can tell you that things with 75%, but it's more that 25% that we're worried about. And I think that's my concern. I know you have the other open text field, but I'm not sure that's going to get to the questions that we want to get at, and I don't think it's as easy as simply adding another line. I think that's my concern and maybe the concern of others. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Susan, please.
Yeah, thank you. I completely agree with what Christine has said. And so I'm cutting my comments a bit shorter. But what I just wanted to flag as well was I understand the point about the complaints and the concern about asking about that. But to some extent, the kind of lack of complaints being reported to us is also useful information, because you know there are various different people within our working group who make claims about problems that may or may not exist. And what we're trying to get to is, well, if there were those problems, then someone must have complained about them. Where, who did the complaints go to and what were they? And if the result of this whole exercise is we get no registries and no registrars come back telling us that they got complaints, well, that's useful information too.
Thank you, Susan. Greg and Stacey, now that you've heard a little bit more explanation of what we're looking for here, any thoughts about whether or not we should, try to go back to these original questions and reformat them in some way that might get to some of the answers that we're looking for? It sounds like the grid doesn't really lend itself to the, and just listening to the discussion here, that doesn't really lend itself that well to what we're trying to get at here. And again, Christine, Kathy, Susan, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of what I thought I was hearing. I noticed Kathy's point, should we move on? But I also think that, we're going to run into other issues like this, and it probably behooves us to spend the time we need to see if we can get a little bit further along.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. This is Greg. I mean, we can certainly get rid of the grid questions. I think maybe another option, although I hesitate to suggest this since it adds even more questions to this already long survey, is to then have kind of another question where we kind of allow for this more kind of anecdotal kind of descriptions and of the costs and the benefits that registry operators perceived. So the grid questions could be maintained, and that would allow us to kind of undertake potentially some type of analysis with respect to the data we get back, but then we'd have a separate question that would allow for these anecdotal responses.
And this is Stacey, just jumping in quickly. This conversation is very helpful to know what kinds of questions or what kinds of answers the group is really hoping for here. And I do understand that the grid is trying to get at a different type of answer. I'm hearing in some respects there are some yes or no or don't know questions that the group is looking for rather than, and so of course a yes-no is a different format than this kind of grid, so we can certainly make those kinds of formatting changes. And it may be helpful so that we can continue moving through the survey for us to have this kind of conversation about what kinds of answers the group is looking for. So some of what you're looking for that we have converted to different formats of questions may be yes or no, and we may not have formatted it in that way. You may have been looking for anecdotal responses in instances where you don't know what kinds of answers you're looking for, or where you may have some informed opinions about those. Where there's informed opinions, it would be great if we could talk about those and format those questions as a multiple choice rather than open text, where you're looking for the universe of potential responses, then open text fields may be the most appropriate. So perhaps, and this is just a suggestion, we might think about going through the survey and talking about, what kind of data is most appropriate, and that will help us know what format is most useful here, because I think that is the big point that is coming across here as we're talking about these grids.
Thank you, Stacey. Christine, please.
Thank you. This is Christine, and I agree that maybe we need to move on 16 and 17 and try to just kind of get a better sense for the rest of the survey. And then perhaps the next call we do have should be just the sub-team just diving deep on stuff, I don't know, and starting to kind of wordsmith. I want to ask a follow-up question to Stacey. I'm looking at questions 16 and 17. I've gone through, and I think a couple of us have gone through now and kind of explained this chunk of the anecdotal section that's on the screen right now. Do you think that the explanation that we've provided at this point satisfies what you just said you were looking for questions 16 and 17, or do you believe that you still have missing information or don't fully understand what we're looking at? Just to get a sense of, have we provided you with enough? Do we need to dive a little deeper? I will give you an example. Increased technical burden for registry operators. I am a registry operator. I am not entirely sure what you mean by that. Do you want me to tell you that? Like, operating costs and technical burden could mean totally different things to different registry operators based on whether or not they do their own back-end registry functions, based on how many registrars they're trying to set up, based on their type of Sunrise. Is that information helpful to you, or have we provided enough and I'm just getting into the weeds? Thanks.
Thank you. This is Greg. I think we do have enough information, at least at this point, with the caveat that if there are options that are currently being provided that are a little bit confusing to you as a registry operator, to the extent you would be willing to do a little bit of wordsmithing, I think that would be very helpful.
Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, and I was wondering if Greg and Stacey had heard anything about some of the marketing issues involved with the rollout of the Sunrise, since so much of the technical is actually done by the registrars. So those questions seem very appropriate to registrars, but some of the issues, the marketing, some of the delays, I mean, once we dive into this, again, we're going to be on lots and lots of variations, but I was wondering if you had heard of some of the marketing issues on this.
And this is Greg again. I have not. And so that sounds like something that would be a good option, or maybe set of options to add to these great questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, too. And if you do have suggestions to add, you know, keeping in mind that, we've got the Google Doc, so we're certainly welcome to add, text in there. But I don't know. I'm not sure if we're entirely clear what you mean, so as Susan is noting, so if you did have some text you wanted to add, that sounds good. Sounds like, Greg, Stacey, you have at least for now what you need. It sounds like we could, correct me if I'm wrong, sub-team members, have a combination of the grid and the anecdotal type questions. If that's the case, Greg and Stacey, do you have enough to at least get a start on this? And keeping in mind that we could have some wordsmithing, and one possibility is that if we had some sub-team members who wanted to look at a previewed survey, a live previewed survey, and then suggested edits there, it might be easier to get a sense of how these could work and, how these might be able to be answered. It might be harder to see that in this current format. Just something for the sub-team members to consider. So shall we move along? Not seeing any objections. Question 18, I guess, is question 18 also then, pardon my ignorance, really kind of a follow-on for what we have above? Greg, maybe I'll just turn things over to you.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Stacey and I will kind of tag team the various questions. So, yeah, we're on question 18. Which begins with, please rank the following possible Sunrise and Sunrise period requirements from most to least preferable.
Anybody have any comments for Greg and Stacey?
And then I should note that there is a follow-up, which is then kind of please explain the ranking, and that was designed to get some of this more anecdotal information could help to kind of inform where policies go going forward.
Thanks. Christine, please go ahead. And then I have Michael.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. This is Christine. I'm losing my place here. I have too many documents open. I apologize. I don't have an issue with the question and the ordering that you've provided, because I think that's pretty clearly taken the date request table, and I like the way you've done that. My concern here is that we've not asked, I think, the critical question here, which is, would you change your answer if the trademark claims was perpetual? So some people, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not the claim service should live in perpetuity, and that's a very hot-button issue, and we haven't addressed that as far as I can see yet. And so I think that piece of it is critically important and should be included in the final version of the survey. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael?
Mine is just a survey technical question, and that is in the wording, whether or not it would, and I'm putting this out, a question that I would face, and so I'm going to ask Greg and Sheila, would it be better to phrase it something along the lines of, please explain why you ranked the requirements as you did in response to the above question, rather than explain the ranking that you provided, which, yeah, it's sort of clear, but I'm just trying to think of an easier way of presenting this. And maybe someone within the registry world understands it, within the trademark world, a little bit more direct syntax might be better. I'm just putting that out there.
No, this is Greg. I actually really like that wording. So we can refine question 19 to incorporate that. That was really helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Susan, please.
Hi. Thank you. I'm not sure I am particularly in favor of this question. I mean, I can see that it's relatively easy to answer it, but I'm not sure. I don't know if it's really getting to what we were asking. I mean, we were, you know, for example, we were asking things like if the size wasn't mandatory, would you still offer a sunrise? And they don't see that being captured here, although perhaps it's somewhere further on. And that was quite an important one, because in before the new GTLDs, there wasn't a requirement to necessarily to run a sunrise, and many registries ran one anyway. So I think that's something we still need to capture. And I'm not sure, we sort of seem to have moved past the duration of the sunrise. And again, I may be missing it somewhere else in the document, but we're not getting to any kind of consideration of the duration of the sunrise. And maybe that's what we were already talking about on those tables. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and this is Greg. I think the only thing that we're missing from the kind of original set of Appendix A questions is this, the duration, or, you know, if it were perpetual. And so we can certainly add that back in.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Susan. And I see in the chat, Michael's agreeing with Susan. Please include, would you still offer sunrise after 18? And Christine's noting, Susan, I think the grids were supposed to be getting at the impact of duration, but they're not. So thank you for noting that, Greg. Any other comments on 18 or 19? Not seeing hands. I'll move to 20. I'll note in the Google Doc that we have a question from Stacy. Should Sunrise registrations have priority over other registrations under specialized GTLDs? Where it says Sunrise Registration and Specialized GTLDs. And I see Christine, and then Kathy, please.
Thank you. This is Christine, and I'm just going to provide some historical context here because this is one of the questions, as I recall, and please, everyone, correct me if I'm wrong, where we were hoping that you could help us word it better. So this question is super vague and ambiguous. Do you think there should be special rules to give precedence to certain groups? Good Lord, what that means. What we're getting at here is that when you have sort of a specialized GTLD, for instance, let's pick on city names. So you have a dot, I'm going to go with London just because we can. When you have a dot London and you want to get, should brand owners get in the door first? So should, you know, Amazon be able to get dot London before police and fire and, you know, Bank of and whatever it is? I mean, so there was supposed to be some sort of, should we take into account sort of a special purpose TLD? And let's say not even a city name. Let's say I run a TLD dot, you know, dot washroom. And so do I allow people who have washroom fixtures and you know, offer public washrooms? I mean, there are other ways to sort of pre-allocate or give precedence to people in a TLD that are not contingent upon a brand that may make more sense than letting brand owners in the door first. That's what we're trying to get at. And so what we're trying to find is, did registry operators experience a lot of pushback for some TLDs when people were like, well, no, this TLD is related to what I do. Why should brand owners get in first? That's what we're trying to get at here. Perhaps that helps a little bit, and maybe Kathy can correct me if I'm wrong. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Yeah, no, this is Kathy. I think Christine's exactly right. And so question for Greg and Stacy. With question 20, you phrased it as, do you think there should be special rules to give precedence to certain groups when registering and restricted use TLDs? And I'm not sure if I were reading through that, I would really understand, and you know, you guys are the professional survey providers, but the original question was, should there be different rules for some registries, such as specialized GTLD registries, community or GEOs, based on their published registration eligibility policies? And we had actually given an example in our materials, so that some of the things Christine had mentioned, so police.paris or police.nyc or windows.construction, where you take, you know, a famous trademark, but in a certain type. And so even though we're thinking of the examples, we're not sure that people rapidly going through a survey will have these specific types of examples or, in fact, any examples in mind as they go through. And I'm not sure a generally worded question will kind of get them to the same place that we're trying to trigger. And so how do you do that as a professional survey provider? Thanks.
Greg or Stacy?
Hi, this is Stacy. Thank you. So I do see the question that you're referring to, Kathy and Christine, under the charter questions. And we had, I guess, not realized that the column marked as relevant charter questions were also suggested survey questions. So this question, question 20, is framed off of the first bullet point in that same row of the appendix, which is phrased, should there be special rules to give precedence to certain groups? But I do think that there could be more clarity if we were to use this question that has examples to help the registrant, the respondent, understand what the intention of the question is. Yes, so I agree.
Thank you, Stacy. Chris, Kathy, you still have your hand up? Is that okay? Thank you. Christine, please.
And again, belt and suspenders here. The other side of me, the lawyer side of me, is like, but we do want, examples are good, but let's make sure that they're not limiting, right? We don't want people to think it only applies to GOTLDs. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Stacy, Greg, do you think you have enough information now to perhaps make some changes to the question? I think it's fairly that the subteam's trying to help by saying that here is where they were hoping for help from you with your expertise in surveys. So while you did capture the question verbatim, and the charter questions are meant as guidance. So we're hopeful that between the two of those, you have a sense of where the subteam is seeking some help, without necessarily giving examples that, as Christine noted, are specific to geo names.
Thank you. Yes, I think that this was very helpful, and we will revise this question.
Thank you very much. Then question 21. Anybody have anything on question 21 from the subteam? Christine, please.
I want to put a pin in this because I think the question is vague. Have you had to balance the restrictions against Sunrise requirements? I'm not entirely sure that people will know what that means. But then if you answered yes, you would get the text, like, what have you done to accommodate the registration eligibility restrictions and Sunrise requirements? Also unclear. I think we want to dig into that a little bit. This whole section was not, I'm sorry, it was not meant to be taken verbatim because we knew that we were asking sort of dumb, like vague, open-ended questions, and we were hoping you guys could help us. If you don't understand what we're getting at, most likely neither will the registry operator, so I think you can take that as a pretty safe rule of thumb. Some cases, probably not, and I've highlighted a couple places where I think the registries would get it. But a lot of TLDs, most TLDs do not have registration eligibility restrictions. So I think the problem we're going to run into is a lot of TLDs, especially small registry operators, might not have any clue what we're talking about. So we may wish to have like a little question mark there that explains it, or something needs to happen there. I don't think there's a problem theoretically with the question. Obviously, we asked it. But I think there's going to be a clarity issue with question 21 and question 21A.
Thank you. Susan, please.
Sorry, trouble getting off mute. Well, I put my hand up before I was looking at the question properly because I was going to say maybe we need to have some kind of a qualification for this question, as in you only answer it if you had eligibility restrictions. But I can see that actually as it's worded, it does intend that it's only answered by people who had eligibility restrictions. But maybe it needs to be more clear. So, at least that would help a little bit. I still don't think it – I still think the wording is vague, as Christine's been saying. But at least then we'd only get it answered by the people that it's being targeted at.
Thank you. Phil, please.
Yeah, thanks. I agree that this question 21 needs more specificity to guide the folks and the registry operators in answering it. If I understand correctly, this would arise from a conflict where someone wants to make a Sunrise registration in a new TLD with eligibility restrictions and not eligible to do so. They're not an eligible party. So why can't we just say, have you had requests for Sunrise requirements from parties who are not eligible to register in the TLD, something more specific that lets them answer knowledgeably? Because when you just say balance is a very vague term. I mean, balance what against what?
Thank you, Phil.
Welcome.
And I see that Susan says, good suggestion, Phil. Let me ask, and Brian is typing. Greg, Stacy, do you have any questions concerning what the subteam has asked that it would like, as far as guidance that it would like here to be able to get clarity on these questions? And I just want to note something, too, that Kathy had put something in the chat as far as an original question, but that's actually in the next block of questions, the one that did you encounter any unanticipated startup issues with these programs, I think. So I think we are still back on page 4. But let me stop there and ask Greg, Stacey, if you have questions that would help you in making these questions, survey questions, less vague.
Thank you. Thanks, all. This is Stacey. I think all the feedback continues to be very helpful. I think in the instances where the wording is vague or confusing, of course, all the feedback is helpful, and we would welcome red line suggestions or comments in the live documents that are in Google Docs for these kinds of suggestions, because I think you all are much more informed about exactly what you're trying to ask respondents. We can certainly help in rephrasing questions so that they don't appear to be leading, and we can make suggestions for how to word questions, but in terms of the meaning and the intended content of the question, I think it may be best for us to defer to your direct feedback in wording. This goes back, I think, also to earlier questions where I think Christine suggested as a registry operator, some of the wording could be interpreted differently by different registries. So in those instances, it would really be helpful for us to see your suggestions for the wording, and we can help in wordsmithing from a survey provider's point of view, but in terms of content, I think you all are better suited for that.
Thank you, Stacey. I have Phil and Christine. Phil, if that is a new hand.
Very old hand.
Thank you. Christine, please.
Thank you. This is Christine Doreen again, and this possibly goes to a fundamental misunderstanding of the purpose of this. We put this survey or questions together knowing that we were not survey experts, which is why we sort of have three different levels of what's the high-level question we wanted to get at, what specific data did we want to, and what sort of anecdotes or stories do we need. And when we put this all together, we truly believed that at the time we would end up with several weeks and calls of meetings between whoever the survey respondent was or the RFP provider was and the working group to go through in wordsmith. This table you have is the result of the best efforts of this really diverse group at trying to wordsmith and get to what we wanted to go, not being survey providers. So asking us to go back again and try to re-wordsmith the questions that we took months to come up with, we knew that they were vague, and we were hoping that the survey experts could come over the top and make them more survey-ish, but using the data in the chart and the information across the varying columns to give yourself the understanding you needed to dive deeper. But we understood you wouldn't get all the details. And so I think that's why there was such an outcry of frustration when we were like we would have one call or two calls, because I think we knew as a working group this is going to take more than one or two calls with you. And I'm not going to speak for the whole group. People can plus one me or they can negative one me or raise their hand. But my frustration is that we knew that these questions weren't ready. If we need to sit down as a working group with you to go through them, we need the time to do that because we know these questions are not right and they can't go out as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. And I'm seeing a lot of plus ones in the chat as well. So, Brian, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. And this is Brian for the record, and I hope this comment doesn't set us back, but I wanted to ask the analysis group folks, when we were discussing the idea of a survey some time ago, there was some concern that we wouldn't be getting meaningful data, but that we would just be getting a sort of rehash of anecdotes and opinions that we already had in front of us. And to be perfectly honest with you, when I look at these questions, this question 21 is a good example. To me, that falls squarely into that category. So I guess my question is, based on your guys' experience with doing surveys, how can we take you know, the idea of a survey and put the questions into a form that will give us actual meaningful data, as opposed to, you know, if you look at the question, did you have to balance those restrictions against sunrise requirements? Well, let's say 60% say yes, 40% say no, or vice versa, or whatever. I guess the question I'm struggling with is, what do those responses tell us? Sure, on the one hand, we'll have quote-unquote data, but I don't think it's the type of data that we're looking for when we talk about, you know, evidence-based policymaking. I hope that makes sense. If not, I can try to clarify. But I guess I'm just kind of struggling to see how some of these questions move the ball forward for us. Thanks.
Brian?
Yeah, this is...
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. This is Greg for the record. That's a really good point and question. I think, you know, in a number of cases, maybe not question 21 specifically, we've tried to kind of move in that data direction. So I think the grid questions are a good example, and some of the multiple choice questions where there are not just yes, no, don't know responses, but some, you know, kind of meaningful options that people can select. For a question in like 21 in particular, I think it's helpful to know that kind of what your all reaction to that, and if you think that it isn't moving the ball forward and there is a different type of data that would be useful, I think it would just be helpful for us to understand what that would look like.
Thank you. Christine, please.
Thank you. This is Christine. I feel like all I'm doing is providing historical context. I think one of the problems that we're facing also, and Brian has not been participating in this working group for now, but you hit it right on the head, Brian. So way to go. Either you did your homework or it's just intuitive for you. But basically, the original charter questions for this entire group were not actual charter questions. They were, I can put out a public comment period. A whole bunch of people wrote in were their comments, and it could have been just random Joe Schmo people. Everything people said got chunked into one document, and it was all equally valid. So some random off the, you know, top of their head person that doesn't even know about ICANN could have made some random comments, and we're here considering them. So what we are trying to get at a lot of these is these anecdotal questions, because we know we want data. We absolutely want data, but we don't even know why some people said what they said. You know, we have people that say the sunrise period should be 120 days, for instance. Why? Nobody ever said why in the charter. Like, there was no basis for these charter questions. So we're having to go back and try to guess at why it is the community might have said, we want this, we want that, you should do this, you should do that. And so a lot of it is just trying to pull in whatever information we can. And I agree with Brian, it's very hard to convert those sorts of open-ended, like, what the hell is going on questions into yes, no, data-driven questions. And so we appreciate that this is a very tough job. We know because we spent a long, long, long time trying to do it ourselves. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. And Brian, I see your hand is still up. Is that new?
I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'm wondering, listening to all of this, and just trying to think about how we can get, better survey questions, and, you know, recognizing that the subteam has spent a great deal of time trying to get these into, as good a format as they could, and now, you know, need assistance in getting them into, you know, to be better, clearer survey questions, and I know that while the subteam anticipated having perhaps weeks to work on that, that time was never something that we could provide in the timeline, given the timeline, you know, directive to get data back within a certain period of time. So I see that we've got some, you know, some expectations that that we have a lot more time working with the analysis group with the vendor as, you know, we maybe thought we would. That being said, I'm wondering, here we are, we're an hour through today, and we certainly had good discussions, but I'm wondering if there's a, you know, another way that we can approach this that
might, you know, as it is, I think we're being able to get very valuable information, I hope, to announce this group real time, meaning that, you know, we're taking these notes. The notes are, you know, going also to announce this group so that they have all of these discussions and, you know, and are getting direction on, you know, how they can try to reword and rework questions. But I'm wondering if we, you know, could, do we want a different approach? Do we want to just do what we're doing now, which is take as long as it needs to take to work through each of these questions to have this back and forth with analysis group or have them go back in this instance and try to suggest some different wording, you know, based on their experience as survey providers. And I see just some things in the chat that I want to note. You know, Susan says, that's why this has been such a challenge. Lori says, we're skeptical of how these questions are translated into meaningful questions for the survey. And she's been down this road before. How we translate the desires for information to usable survey. Christine, we're passionate because we care. We don't want this time to be a waste. Kathy, would analysis group like to go back for another pass, knowing more about our background? And I see Greg is typing, but Christine, I'm going to stop talking and over to you, please.
Thank you so much, Julie. And I appreciate Kathy's suggestion that analysis group could go back and take another pass, but given the fact that there are so many gaps in understanding and maybe just even in the way our questions were worded and how analysis group sort of needs to get that historical, I'm not sure they can. I think for this doc, maybe they could. Maybe we've sort of expounded and given enough. I've personally got enough of a monologue that they probably could go back through the registry document again. But I don't know that they're going to have any of that history for the other sections. I think we probably need to take them through these other sections. And you know, if we have some time to actually go through and look at these docs before the next call, you know, maybe it will go faster. But I think we need to give them that background for the other sections as well. I don't think they will have obtained background on the brands or on the registrants just by talking about registry operators. That's my sense. I just don't think that we're going to be there at this point. I also wonder, I'm also trying to be really mindful of the timeline. So having them take another pass and then having us to have time to look at them and go back, I don't know that'll be the fastest option. It might literally be going through question by question, real time, and doing the best we can, but in a much more expedited fashion, knowing that we have our, you know, kind of our marching orders in the original doc in front of us. Thanks. Susan.
Christine. Susan, please.
Yes, thanks. It's Susan. I can only really speak to the registrar section, and in fact, I can only speak to about half of it because I haven't gone through the whole of it yet. But I absolutely think that analysis group would benefit from us going through the registrar section rather than us just imagining that they could back and take another look. There's a lot of assistance we can give them and background that we can give them, and I don't think they can do it on their own. They don't have the information. Or they don't have the background knowledge, is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you very much, Susan. So over to you, Greg and Stacy. So for example, with respect to, say, question 21, and as we're proceeding here and giving you the background, do you feel that this is helpful and then we can just continue with a back and forth of where you're getting the background and then you may be able to ask questions or reformulate questions. Let me just leave it there and see if this approach is helpful to you.
Yeah, I mean, the background is certainly helpful. At least it has been on this registry document, so I'm sure that it will be for the other ones as well. I mean, I think kind of just thinking forward with respect to the call that's scheduled for tomorrow, and I think there's this call scheduled for Monday as well. I mean, to a point that was made just a little bit earlier, I think it will be My guess is it will go a little bit faster once people have had a chance to review the documents ahead of time. And I think in particular, if it were possible to kind of edit the documents in Google Docs, if you had any suggestions or provide comments ahead of the calls, that would just, I think, help to, we would look at those before the call, and I think that would just help to make things be a little bit more efficient.
Thank you, Greg. And I have a question to the sub-team, and it gets back to the objection about scheduling of calls kind of at the last minute that Susan raised, and the fact that folks are still, trying to wade through their various surveys. And, Susan noted she's only partway through the registrar survey. Would it be useful to, we know we have the timeline, but let's hope that we are gaining some efficiencies. I know it doesn't sound like it, but because we're having this one-on-one, back and forth with analysis group, and we're being able to give them notes practically in real time that they can take back, and we also have the Google Docs, would it be useful to take a break, say, tomorrow, to allow people more time to review and perhaps comment on the Google Docs and then reconvene the calls in this same format? And Christine, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yes, I agree. I think we do need a break. Also, just as a reminder that I know that's very generous and kind, and I'm glad we're talking about this. But to be clear, my schedule is completely booked for 2 weeks. So simply giving me back 2 hours that had already just been taken is going to give me enough time. So I'm going to do everything I can. I will keep that 2 hours scheduled for just this project. But I want to just caution that don't expect that we've all thoroughly redlined 5 documents by Monday, because I don't know about everyone else, but if I've already got 10 hours of work scheduled today, I've got to fit this in. So just, I don't want to be a whiner, but just set expectations, perhaps. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. And I think it was you who suggested that rather than each and every one of the sub-team members reviewing all of the surveys, I think there was a suggestion that the person who was sort of the shepherd of that survey, would then be the primary person to look at that survey, because I think everybody has, other commitments, and I see a lot of, agreements to your suggestion, too. Christine, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. I did suggest that, and I think that's right. I think that we, the people that did the primary drafting, we'll have that historical context. I'm hoping that the reason I'm the most vocal speaker-upper on this section is because this is the section I drafted, and I fully expect that the people that drafted the other sections will take the lead in helping sort of provide that context for analysis group for their sections as well. But to be clear, and I want to set this expectation because I've something about what Greg said made me a little concerned. He talked about going through and redlining the Google Docs so that they can see it coming into the meetings. To be clear, we don't have 100% consensus on all of this. I mean, we've sort of come up with this doc that we've agreed on more or less, but we don't necessarily all agree on every point. So if I come in and say, for instance, and this came up yesterday's call, if you scroll back up in the current version of the survey, there's a question in there where we mention amending the registry agreement, question 12, in order to require registry operators to publish their reserves names lists. Now, I've said on this list, and you would never know this, but I've said that I don't think we need to mention it. Other people have said we do. So just because I say I support removing this, I think you need to be really careful, and there's not necessarily a group agreement. So many of us on this call, I would say every single one of us on this call has made concessions, many concessions. And I've agreed to live with language I'm not happy with, and Kathy and Susan and Rebecca and Michael and everyone else is all, Lori, we've all agreed to live with certain language even if we're not thrilled with it. So I would caution you taking the comment of any one person and incorporating those comments wholesale without making sure that the rest of the group is in alignment. Second comment I would like to say is one of the things that struck me when I went back into the Google Doc this morning was that there were no edits to the first part of the doc based on our conversations yet. So to the extent that analysis group is sort of already making changes and is already sort of making red lines and edits, I think it would be very helpful for us to also see that in the Google Doc because the, and maybe it's because I'm looking at the clean version, but because I would like to get some feedback on is what we're telling you sinking in, are you getting it? And if questions 1 through 12, you've very clearly gotten what we're talking about and all of the changes, you know, that we've talked about are made, I'm going to have a high degree of confidence that the rest of the changes you're going to make are also accurate. But if you're still not getting it, then I'm going to also be concerned that we've got to dive deeper. And so I hope that's positive feedback. That's not meant to be negative at all. But it's sort of like a feedback loop, right, getting, you know, kind of plus and minus going back and forth. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. And this is Julie Hedlund from staff. I'll just put myself in the queue. I maybe misspoke. We do have the Google Docs, but I don't believe that we have invited analysis group to be entering edits in there. So if you're not seeing edits, it's not because something's been done that's not been reflected to my knowledge. And before I go to Greg, I'll just note that there's been some recommendation to meet in Panama. Well, we have 2 weeks before Panama, and I think that, and I'll defer to the sub-team here, but I think that we've got some good momentum, and if we are waiting for Panama, then we very definitely will see a huge shift in the timeline, and, you know, and do keep in mind, too, that the timeline is part of the RFP, and, you know, there are budgetary, you know, cost issues with expanding the timeline as well. So staff would just like to respectfully suggest that we know everybody is very busy, but we do hope that staff can assist in moving this along as far as possible prior to Panama. Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. And this might sound a bit contradictory given what I was saying earlier on about concerns about how fast we were rushing this, but I'd just like to support what you said. I don't necessarily want to do two-hour calls every day when I haven't had a chance to look at the documents, but I also don't think it would be a good idea for us to sort of pause our work hoping that Panama is going to, you know, because we're face-to-face, it's going to somehow be a solution because, you know, frankly, we're still on the registry section, and we've already spent, like, how long, 3 hours on it? We'll never find even 3 hours when we're all three in Panama, let alone, you know, the kind of 12 hours that theoretically might be needed. So, I think a face-to-face meeting to iron out some issues might be really useful in Panama, but we can't imagine that we'll get this work done there.
Thank you very much, Susan. So, and I note a few comments here. Dan Greg is confirming, yes, analysis group had not been invited to edit. Certainly, analysis group is now invited to edit based on whatever guidance they've gotten so far. So we'll make that clear. And Mary's noting, is there any objection to using the next 2 weeks? I think I'm seeing that there is there's support for us continuing. So let me bring us back. So to question 21, Greg and Stacy, do you think you have enough background and guidance thus far on that question to do some wordsmithing, or shall we continue a discussion on that?
No. Sorry, this is Greg. Yeah, I think we have enough guidance on question 21. So that was very helpful.
Thank you. Question 22. Any issues? Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. I just am not sure if we're asking these questions in the wrong order. Because I think this question actually kind of goes before questions 20 and 21.
Thank you, Christine.
And I apologize. I have to step away again.
Yeah, no problem. Let's take a look.
So question 22 is, which of the following pre-general availability programs that limit participants? I'm looking then back at the chart here. Greg, Stacy, I'm trying to see where this matches up. Please,
Yeah, we're also currently looking at Appendix A and looking for that information. But I think as a kind of a more general comment, you know, if
I can tell you.
There are kind of questions about the flow of the survey and thinking about which questions should be coming before certain questions, we're happy to adjust the ordering of the questions. So that's very helpful feedback, assuming we agree that it should go up earlier.
Yeah, okay. And Susan says page 4. Yeah, were you speaking, Susan? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the certainly the version I'm looking at, it's on page 4 and it's the second block, so it's actually right at the bottom.
Ah, okay. So yeah, so
I think the key point is though that the question was how could, and we're now just saying should they, and I'm not sure that that's the same thing. I mean, we're already asking should they in question 21, really, aren't we?
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think well, you'll see this occur from time to time. This was an attempt to move away from having just as many open-ended responses. You know, if we could have a follow-up to this question, so if they say yes, then we could then ask how. But it does add another question to the survey and an open-ended question to the survey.
Thank you. And
apologies, I haven't put my hand up. But could I just? I think the point is, my point was though that I think 21 is seeking the information from them about whether they think there needs to be something changed, or perhaps is. Well, perhaps it isn't quite asking that, but maybe you're right. Maybe you have to ask, should they be changed, and then you say how. But the real point was we wanted to establish if people are saying things need to be differently dealt with, then they need to be suggesting a practical solution rather than just a sort of statement that something needs to be done differently. We wanted people, you know, we wanted registries to be able to identify what they think would work better from their, you know, from their perspective, that they could accommodate better than the current rules.
Thank you very much, Susan. Greg, does that help clarify?
Yeah, it does. We'll just add a follow up to question 22. So if they answer yes to should, then we'll ask how.
Thank you. Question 23. Anybody want to raise any issues on this one? It's perfect. Sorry. I'm not seeing any hands up, Greg.
Okay. In that case, we can move to question 24. Here we actually did have a question. And I guess the issue was, this is very, kind of per the question in Appendix A, it was focused on startup issues with these various programs. And I think we just wanted to make sure that that you were only interested in data with respect to problems that registries ran into regarding startup issues and not kind of later on as the program was continuing to operate.
Thank you. And Susan, please.
And apologies, I don't think I'm answering that question, but I think 24 is a sort of if yes to 23. So it may be that's your intention, but it doesn't actually say so. So you know, you only go and answer 24 if you did run one of those programs. That was the
Yes, no, that's a good point, and that's our intention, but it's certainly not reflected in the document.
Thank you. So, but Kathy, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is Kathy. Greg and Stacey, this may be one of the areas where kind of your coming in from outside may help. It depends what you mean by startup issues. These are programs for startup, and we kind of assume that in our discussion. So did you have any unanticipated startup issues? I think for us means did you have any unanticipated issues with these programs, because they are by definition startup programs, not ongoing programs. They all have to do with launch. But that kind of clarification may be a really good, you know, the question you're raising may be a question others have. So thanks for raising it.
No, thanks, Kathy, and that's helpful. So I think what we'll do for this question is just remove the word startup.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Greg. So please go ahead. 25, I believe. And Kathy, is that a new? Nope. Okay, thank you.
I'm just going to jut in. This is Kathy. I wish I had 5 screens in front of me, because I keep jumping back and forth and then losing my hand. So we all need lots of screens. ICANN should buy them for us. Thanks.
Sure, of course. Anybody have any comments on 25? Not seeing any hands up. 26? Any comments on 26?
Yeah, this is Kathy.
Please go ahead, Kathy.
Does this capture, and I don't have all the information in front, but isn't, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. So question 26 is, how are you able to reconcile your plans for limited registry, you know, all the different types of launches with the Sunrise and claims? And I thought we were looking more, or at this point in the question, wouldn't it be more broader, and especially if we're going to an open text field, how did you do it, but how would you want us to do it? How would you like to be able to reconcile your plans? Because what we may hear about again is the problems that they hit, and we've heard about these from some GOs and others. But, you know, again, shouldn't question 26 be a little broader? How would you like to be able to reconcile future plans for limited registration period, approved launch, et cetera, with Sunrise and claims?
Thank you, Kathy. Susan, please.
I'm just going back to the original document, and it does seem, you know, well, it's there up in the box. I mean, the question was, how were you able to reconcile? And so, if there's then a follow-up question, which is, what suggest you have for resolving any issues? So that would only be something that you'd answer if you'd encountered any issues. But, I mean, so if you encountered in question 24 any unanticipated issues with the programs, then a follow-up might be, you know, what do you think would work better? But I don't think we should be, you know, I don't think we should be changing the tone of the questions, that we did all agree.
Thank you, Susan. And go ahead, Kathy.
Right. So a good suggestion from Susan that we're missing, kind of the what suggestions do you have for the future new GTLD rollouts? You know, what rules or any would you recommend for resolving these issues that you've raised? And here I'm reading from our original, the subteam's original document. What rules, if any, would you recommend for resolving these issues that you've raised above? And the question that's on our screen, how could pre-general availability periods be made more accessible and successful? So to Greg and Stacey, how would we, and to Susan's comment, how do we put that kind of broad future-looking question back in? Because it's the policy, you know, the working group's going to be working on the policy for the future. So how do we put that back in? Thanks.
Greg, Stacey, any questions with that?
No, I mean, I think we can add a question that's more forward-looking and just have it be an open text field. I know I sound like a broken record, but that, of course, then does add another question with another open text field in it. So I kind of continue to be a little bit concerned about the length of the survey.
Right. I see Susan also is typing. I'm just wondering, are we introducing a totally new question, or are we trying to reflect one of the original questions? Susan Payne says, but you only answer if you encounter problems. Okay, so we could have it as a question you would, maybe it wouldn't be bad. Lots of people will never hit this question at all. So perhaps, Greg, that's a way that we can mitigate this the length a little bit, in that it really only kicks in if you sort of have a reason to answer it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Thank you. And now I've forgotten where we are. I'm sorry. We were on 27, is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you. 27, please. Any comments? Thank you. I'm not seeing any hands up. 28. These are related. Please, Susan, go ahead.
Sorry, Julie. Just another tedious one is I'm presuming that there's some gating in here somewhere so that if you didn't have any IDN TLDs, you don't have to answer this.
Greg,
yes, Susan, that's correct.
Oh, hang on, no, sorry. It's second level, so ignore me. But I guess if you don't offer IDN languages at your second level, then you don't need to answer that. But I mean, you know, maybe the answer is that they just need an option which says not applicable or something, because I'm, you know, just because there isn't an answer that says I didn't do this.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to handle it.
Actually, a gating question earlier. This is Christine. Sorry, there's a gating question earlier asking if you offered second level domains.
Second level domains or second level IDNs?
Level IDNs. I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Wait, it's way higher.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kathy, please.
Yeah, just a quick recommendation, especially since high up. Can we spell out things like SLD, second level domains, just to make it much easier for people to go through? I'm always amazed at who knows our acronyms and who doesn't. I think IDN is pretty well defined. TLD is pretty well defined. I'm not sure about SLD, so I recommend expanding that. Thanks.
Yes, be happy to. Thank you.
Thank you. Question 29. Any comments? And we have 29A and 29B as related. Kathy, please.
Old hands, sorry.
Please.
Hi, this is Christine. Question 29B. I need more coffee. The registry doesn't send claims notices. So that's probably maybe we took that one directly from the survey. I'm not entirely sure. But registry would probably be aware of a claims notice, but you're probably going to be best to get that answer from the registrar. And if that's a mistake we put in there, I apologize.
Right, Stacey?
Thank you. This is, yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
This is Stacey. Thank you. We can remove that question.
Kathy, please.
Sorry, which one are we removing? Because that may solve my question.
This is Christine. So question 29 is, did you offer extended claims? And that's a registry question. 29A is, how long did you extend it? And that is 29A, and that's fine because that's a registry operator decision. But how many did you send claims notices?
That's a registrar
that
question.
Would registrar question. So I think we have to know that. I think we have to remove that question.
Agreed. I was just about to say the same thing, but we had outside noise here. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine and Kathy. Question 30, please.
This is Kathy.
Please go ahead, Kathy.
All the same questions as above. This, the question of technical burden, a lot of this is registrar. The technical implementation is registrar. The impact for registries is probably largely marketing, and also the impact of having people come to them and say, I'm trying to register something and I can't register it, or having anchors come through and say, I can't register the domain name because I'm getting legal notices that my lawyer says I shouldn't click through. So all of these tables, just as above, just descend into a whole range of issues that I really think we could be helping define for the next month or so, and I don't think we have time for. So just ditto for all the questions in these tables above.
Thank you, Kathy. I see Greg is typing.
Hi, this is Stacey. We'll just jump in on the phone. I do agree with Christine's comment that I think these grids follow the same kind of format as in Q16 and Q17, only they're related to the claims period. So any changes that I think we can incorporate for those earlier questions would probably apply here, but certainly tell us if otherwise.
Thank you, Stacey. And Christine, please.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to eat a little bit of breakfast here, or lunch, whatever we call the meal at 10:30 in the Pacific time. I actually think, and this, we don't have to solve this now, but I'm just going to lob it out there for the working group to think about. If we were to agree sort of grid, and I am going to give it some thought. I take Kathy's point completely, but I don't think we should toss out the grid with the bathwater just because. Remember that Sunrise and claims are kind of flip side of the same thing. And then we've got one chart for 30 days and one chart for longer than 30, and then for claims, one chart for 90 and one chart for longer than 90. I think there's possibly a way to come up with some sort of one matrix that digs into the various costs and benefits of Sunrise and claims for different lengths of time, while still also possibly gathering anecdotal data. It's kind of like just, you know, eating at the back of my brain right now, but I want to make sure that we reserve a little time to think about that, because it's possible that we end up with sort of one big concluding question, which is, so, you know, given all of this information, rank these following things, and the good and the bad and the ugly. You know, I think there's a possibility here. So that's all I wanted to throw out there, not that we have to do anything with it now, but for the working group itself, I think it would be useful to consider.
Thank you, Christine. Any other? Please, Susan, go ahead.
I like Christine's suggestion, and I wouldn't at all suggest she doesn't think about it further. But I am a bit concerned by this, because it seems to me that we're just asking for opinion, and we're asking for opinion from one group about, you know, the benefits or drawbacks. But they're obviously going to rank the ones that matter to them, and. You know, so if you're a registry and you don't want to run a Sunrise or you don't want to run a claims, then you're going to put, you know, it's not likely to prevent cyber squatting, and it's, you know, whatever. But then you're going to put, it's going to increase my costs. You know, because, I mean, we could answer this for each of the respondents now without sending it to them. I'm just not sure what we get from sending this, because we already know what they're going to say, and we'll just get a load of opinion. But it's not based on anything apart from, you know, apart from that, you know, them advancing their own positions.
Thank you, Susan. Michael, please.
Yeah, Michael Grimm for the record. Addressing Susan's point, I think the same holds true for, you know, all of the groups to whom we're addressing questions. All of them will have the opportunity with this type of question to, you know, express their personal prejudicial beliefs, perhaps. But if it's followed up with a, what is the basis for your perception, for your opinion, it might get at, one, whether or not there actually is a basis that they can quantify, or two, that's just a feeling, in which case that might be something that we can take into consideration. I think far more important, of course, are the actual, statistics, the number of metrics that we're able to come up with through this survey. But I think giving the ability to voice this is not a bad idea. I think the greater concern I would have would be in how it is analyzed afterwards. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And I see Susan is typing. Michael, sure, but then we just get a bunch of competing opinions.
And Michael again, and I think that's where we are now. I certainly don't think that it would be terrible to leave out, you know, open-ended questions that just allow you to express what you believe the effect would be. But I think asking the question and then giving respondents the ability to explain the basis for that, again, might get to information that would be useful that we may not have asked about. And at the same time, in analyzing, I think would need to take into consideration, one, if they're just expressing their feelings and they have not provided any statistical information that would back that up, or if they have provided that information, then we could take that into consideration. But, you know, whatever we determine for one of the groups, I think we should apply to all of the groups. So, you know, the same sort of questions, you know, has the new GTLD program affected the cost of enforcing your trademarks, yes or no? You know, we'd have to take out the general questions on all of these. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. So Greg and Stacey, do you have enough information to, does that give you guidance on how to address these grid questions? Do you have any questions for the sub-team that would help you, reformulate? I know you've talked about 16 and 17 as possibly guidance as well.
Right, thanks. This is Stacey. Yes, I think we have enough information to at least try again. I think that we have enough information to try again. And, of course, yes. The answer is yes. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Then I will note for question 32, Stacey, you had noted it, that it's a very complex question. Is it possible to ask a simpler version of this question? And that is, if you run a registry that has an eligibility-restricted TLD that offered LRPs, a QLP, and an ALP, and other funder-type programs, et cetera, et cetera. Does anybody – Michael, please.
Oh, sorry, that's an old hand.
Ah, okay. Any thoughts on, does anybody have any thoughts on how this could be simplified? Kathy?
Coming off mute and flipping screens. There's a discussion, Julie, in the Google Doc, and I raised the question to Stacy's comment about Q Q32, doesn't this belong in the Q23 to 26 section above? And perhaps it's now covered by the expansion we suggested a few minutes ago. I just put that in a few minutes ago. And Christine said, agree. So just pointing Stacey and Greg to some new comments in the Google Doc.
Well, thank you. And I see that this just showed up for me. Thanks so much, Kathy. Christine, please.
Thanks, this is Christine. Yeah, piggybacking on what Kathy said, I think that there is this doc, and I understand organization is interesting because you can categorize things in multiple ways, but this doc specifically has questions related to sort of eligibility restrictions, LRP, QLP, ALP, found kind of scattered throughout, and I'm not sure, this is just maybe something for Stacey and Greg to look at. I'm not sure if there's a way to pull those together in a way that doesn't disrupt the rest of the continuity and the reason why they were organized where they were currently. So if you go back, it starts all the way with the jurisdiction question, names reserved for jurisdiction. It kind of ties through. There's other questions about restricted TLDs. There's other questions about, you know, Sunrise and the ability of people to, you know, how Sunrise impacted, you know, these programs. And then finally, we have this question. So there's at least four questions where I think grouping them will allow for a certain continuity that will allow us to streamline all of the questions because the person answering the question will already be thinking along the lines of that type of question. Or if you've already self-identified as not participating in any of these, you don't see these four at all, in which case, to Greg's point, you shorten the survey for that quite significant number of people, quite frankly, because a lot of people did not do any of these. So you would only show the people that did set one of these four options, you would only show them these four questions, I think. So I think that could be helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Greg and Stacey, is that helpful guidance? Does that make sense to you?
That is helpful. Thank you. And I do think that it would be helpful to filter these questions. I guess some follow-up questions are, for example, in the first question where we say, if you run a registry with any of these programs, were there any aspects of the claim service that didn't work? Is it one question would be, is it important for us to ask this separately for people who offered an LRP and then ask for the aspects that were difficult for the LRP and then ask separately for the QLP, separately for the ALP, et cetera? Or is the information still useful if we ask this as one question? So for any of these programs, were there any aspects that didn't work with the claim service, which is how the question is currently phrased?
Kathy, and then Christine.
Yeah, good question, Stacey. I would recommend that maybe in the answer you ask people to explain in light of whatever program or programs they offered so that we'll have, as a data point, we'll have that knowledge of whether they're talking about an LRP, an ALP, or a QLP. So I'd keep the question the same. I'm not sure you have to break them up, although I'd be interested to see what Christine says. But just ask them to qualify so that we have the data when it comes back. Thanks.
Thank you. Christine?
Yeah, thank you. This was Christine. I also don't know that we have to break them up because we're hopefully gathering which ones they're offering. I'm looking, most people would not have offered QLP, ALP, or Founders. Like, those are kind of all one thing. QLP, ALP, and Founders programs are essentially one thing. You offer one, you wouldn't offer all three of those. Generally speaking, I think you may have people that offered one or more of the three categories, meaning it's eligibility restricted, there's an LRP, or there's one of those initial types of programs. So I think that depending on how we end up with the questions, I can almost imagine a scenario in which we did, depending on how we word the questions, I could almost see a grid working here, assuming that we still allow for that question of people with that, what changes would you make to better align? That most specific part of this question is what changes would you like to see? Because we are asking the people who ran those programs to identify how they could solve the problems they've encountered. We're less concerned about did you encounter problems because we know they did. Yes, we'd like to gather data on what problems they encountered, but we want to hear about what would have made their life easier. And so that's the most important part of this question, less, you know, who had what kind of process. Thanks.
Thank you very much. So any other questions, Stacey, Greg? Was that helpful?
That was helpful. I want to make sure that I'm parsing through the question now. Yes, that was helpful. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So I believe it or not, we've come to the end of all the questions, unless I'm missing anything. And so Lori Shulman says, yay. Christine, please go ahead.
I'm going to throw out a suggestion for the working group to weigh in on. And this is just an idea, and I'm not obviously not going to be offended if people disagree with me, but I would be willing to volunteer to, while the analysis group is kind of redrafting the registry operator questions, to be available via email or phone if they have a follow-up on this specific, because this is the one I drafted, with the caveat that, of course, the whole working group would or the whole, you know, sub-team would finalize and have the final say. And I would also be willing to concede that sort of ability to offer assistance to the other leaders of each section as well, if that would help streamline. I don't know if people are nervous about that or if that's something they would prefer to be done completely transparently and on the list. But if that could be helpful, and if other people are also willing to volunteer similarly for when they get to their sections, when analysis group tries to redraft, I would be willing to do that. But again, I also understand where people would be really nervous about anything happening behind the scenes as well. Thoughts?
Thank you, Christine. I see Michael is saying, I would be glad to provide TM Brandom or questions reference for AG. And I don't know that we need to get everybody's buy-in here, but I can say thank you very much, Christine, for that suggestion, and thank you, Michael, because I think that that would give us some efficiencies in the process, and also because each sort of shepherd of the survey, so to speak, would have, probably more expertise than others, having been the author of that. I'll see other folks are typing also in the chat. A question for how we proceed with respect to meetings. Yes, and Christine says, to be clear, I would not be wordsmithing, but just proving context background. Thank you. I think that's understood. And Greg and Stacey, does that sound good to you?
Yes, thank you very much, everyone, for offering your time.
So a question we do have on the calendar, the meeting tomorrow. We don't necessarily have to go through these surveys in any particular order, but the order as they appeared in the original chart was registries, registrars, brand owners, registrants, and potential registrants. Now, Susan, I noted earlier you said you had not been able to make it through. You did not have time to make it through all of the survey for the registrars. I think, Michael, you indicated that you had made through the survey for the brand owners. I'm just asking if, number one, does the sub-team want to keep the call tomorrow? And if so, what survey would they like to move to? While, of course, in the background, analysis group would be making edits to the registry's survey. Susan says, I will spend more time on registrar section tomorrow. Michael, please go ahead.
Yeah, I would be glad to go ahead with the trademark brand owner portion. I have not loaded any of my proposed red line. I can do that on the Google Doc tonight or this afternoon, so that it'll be out there. But I'd be glad to go ahead with that.
Oh, thank you. So excuse me, and I know Susan's saying she could get through her section. So let's go ahead with the TM brand owners tomorrow for tomorrow's call. Let's suggest, as I think I heard some agreement, that we now proceed forward for the next 2 weeks, and so staff could do a doodle for additional call times, and you know, recognizing everybody's busy schedule, but hopefully providing enough time that we could get through these, and then also giving some real-time comments to analysis groups so that they can be working on finalizing the surveys as we go, so as perhaps to not lose time. And I see Michael says, Susan, do you want the weekend? I can run the TM brand section. Kathy says we're stepping tomorrow. I think we are meeting tomorrow, Kathy. I'm not seeing any objections to that, to do the trademark brand owners survey. And Susan says, lovely, Michael. So staff will suggest then to set up the doodle for calls following for the next 2 weeks. We'll include Monday's call since we had somewhat arbitrarily scheduled that, so we'll see whether or not we have availability for that call. So is there anything that anybody wants to raise before we close out here and we are a minute before the top of the hour? Seeing some typing in the chat. Lori says, yep, glutton for more work. Thanks, Lori. Thanks, all. Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Thanks, everyone, so much for joining for this call. Again, sorry for the forced merge, but I think we've really accomplished, thanks to all of you, a lot here. And thanks so much for all your dedication on this. And I hope you can salvage the rest of your day, and we will talk tomorrow.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.